Excuse me, this is the operator, and I just need to inform all participants that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Lori. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Consumer Metrics call on the 26th of October. On the line, we have Cheryl Langdonor, Tobias Mahler, John Berard, Mason Cole, Sintra Sukunanan, Steve Del Bianco, Ivan Lebovich, Jonathan Robinson, Jonathan Tuck, Mike and Michael Graham. For staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, myself, Glenda Saint-Jury, and Julia Charvolin. Have I left off anybody? Thank you very much. Barry, over to you. But just before, may I remind you all, please to say your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and Barry, now it is over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. And I'm going to volley over to Jonathan Zook as our chair for what is hopefully going to be our last and final meeting.
Yay. thanks, Barry. So, as many of you know, this meeting was motivated by what was largely a fairly warm reception to the presentations about this work. I think the ICANN community as a whole and everyone I've spoken to in it have been impressed with the level of effort here and the level of detail in this document. And I know that Bruce, in particular, who proposed this resolution in the first place, was very excited with the results. So, thanks, everybody. I think it's been worth the effort that we've put in. What this meeting is about is just an issue that Jeff Newman raised as part of the registry constituency, because such a large portion of the new TLDs that were coming online were had the potential to kind of skew the performance results, such that the targets that we've set might not be met because of brand TLDs that were artificially not posting notices and things like that, and kind of made the recommendation that we categorize the new TLDs a little bit to get a sense of whether or not a metric would apply to all of them or if the metric should be different for each of them. And a number of conversations took place at the last ICANN meeting that resulted in this particular draft that Steve prepared. And I think what we need to do is just kind of go through this. We've gotten some feedback from Jeff Newman and some from Michael Graham. And I guess we should, and we got a little bit of feedback from Wendy Seltzer as well. So it might be worth discussing some of that, even though Wendy's not on the call, just to make sure that it's a part of the conversation before we call this finished. Steve, can I pass it to you to focus in on anything in particular umbrella-wise that came out of some of the conversations that took place at the last ICANN meeting?
Thanks, Jonathan. We did start down the road of thinking where these changes would occur, but we also talked philosophically about the need to be clear when closed versus open would be counted in a metric, as well as finding out how to come up with a vocabulary on what it means to be closed, whether there's an important distinction between a closed brand, like a .Amazon, and a closed generic, like a .Book, that is available only to Amazon and its affiliates. And that led us to try to come up with some concrete ways of defining things. And that all begins on page 9, but I think that's all I have in terms of umbrella conversations. You want to dive right in?
Well, I guess then the last thing is probably, and I just want to see if people have any other reactions, because the comments that Wendy made, I think, still fall in the umbrella category. Is there anybody that didn't receive or isn't familiar with the feedback that Wendy provided? It was just a quick email. But it might be worth
Jonathan,
that, because they're high-level points and not specific ones.
Cheryl, Jonathan?
I'm sorry?
Cheryl, Gia?
Yes?
Wanting to put my hand up because I'm on that thing that doesn't let me actually put my hand up, so I have to jump in. The only point with Wendy's comments that I wanted to raise, and absolutely made sure that we were happy with, I did not read it that it required any alteration to what we had put in, noting the comments not only from, on behalf of NCUC, if not NCSG, but also obviously on Evan. Evan's on the call, so he can speak for himself. But I didn't read as if any modification was required, but I just wanted to check that everyone else felt that as well. I thought it was a reaffirmation of what had been said, not a reaction to anything new.
Yeah, and there was a new draft, I guess, and she was reacting that her objections hadn't been addressed, I guess. And in addition to the dissent that's in there, there's also something at the bottom of page 2 of the document that explicitly lays out the notion that these metrics aren't designed to create new compliance requirements, contract requirements, et cetera. I think she has a fear that there's some indirect, scope expansion that might come out of setting performance metrics like that because people will manage to them, that ICANN's, compliance will be, forced to enforce some of the things that we're measuring. And I think at the bottom of page 2, we deal with that explicitly. So I, too, believe there aren't changes called for. I just wanted to make it a part of the agenda. But if we're all agreed, we can move on. Is there anyone else that wants to say anything about these comments before we dive
There's
into the details?
Jonathan, it's Jonathan Robinson. I had my hand up, so just if I may.
I had her email up instead of the Adobe thing. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries. I was reviewing this, and although I understand and fully appreciate the desire to keep the scope to only the changes that were discussed in Toronto, I would like to revisit one metric and just have a brief discussion on that. So I'll save that for a little later, but I would like to just flag with you and colleagues on the call that I'd like to have a little chat about it. It's 1.9 UDRP and URS.
Okay, so do you want to bring that up when we get to that particular metric then?
Yeah, happy to do that. So we sequence through the document, and I'll just keep that in mind.
Do Steve, Michael, or Mason have anything on Wendy's comments?
Yeah, this is Steve.
Okay, go ahead.
In Appendix D, we noted in detail Wendy's concerns, and then Evan did a little counter to that, and that was with respect to our final draft. Wendy's latest email reiterates that point, but again, in Appendix D, Wendy was recommending removal of over half of the metrics in the consumer trust area, and this working group recognized that as a philosophical difference. We are following what the affirmation of commitments requires, which is consumer trust, as well as the board's instructions to come up with metrics and definitions. So we feel that all but Wendy and Alex, that we were within the scope of what we were supposed to do, and there was sort of a philosophical difference there. Wendy's other concern that you raised, Jonathan, is I believe a red herring that suggests that setting up metrics would force ICANN to begin to enforce them on a per-registry basis during the middle of the program. And that also came up in Toronto at the Saturday meeting, and I believe it was Milton Mueller who made that point. And in fairness, I believe that's just a fundamental misunderstanding of what the metrics were designed to do by the affirmation of commitment. It's a review that's done a full year after they're in the root. There is no intent, and as you said at the bottom of page 2, we laid it out, there's no intent on the part of the board or this working group to micromanage each and every registry to hit every one of the metrics in this. It's an aggregate measure only.
That's
so
right.
I wanted to get all that on the record. I strongly doubt that this working group would make significant changes due to Wendy's latest email, since we did our best to accommodate and fully acknowledged her dissent in Appendix D.
I think that's exactly right. I know the issue of enforcement of new registry promises is a completely separate topic that's going on, and I think it behooves us not to let them get conflated with this exercise. If the decision gets made that those promises need to be enforced, it won't be a function of having created this metrics document. Mason?
Thanks, Jonathan. And first, I just want to say thank you for letting me join the group this late in the process. I recognize that Red Star participation wasn't as strong as it should have been prior, and when this came to the attention of the council, I've jumped back in. So thank you for letting us join up this far down in the process. I believe I have the same concern that Wendy expressed. Only because I and Jonathan, I take you at your word that you and Steve that this isn't going to be used as a document to hold contracted parties to particular metrics as a compliance function. You'll forgive me for being wary because there's so much focus from the community on contracts right now in general, particularly registrar contracts, and there's also a move now afoot to get in the new TLD space the portions of applications from new TLDs transformed into binding agreements as part of registry agreements. So I do think there's an unhealthy focus on contracts as policy tools, and as a contracted party, I'm just concerned that there's too much migration toward that. So whatever work the work group can do to make sure that this document doesn't fall into that same sort of black hole, I think would be appreciated on the part of contracted parties.
Mason, this is Steve. Please do, when we go through this document, if you spot a single metric that ever implies that the compliance department is supposed to apply the metric on a compliance basis, you bring it up, and we'll fix that. We require compliance to produce data for us so that review team would look at it a year and a half afterwards and figure out whether the program as a whole was promoted consumer trust, consumer choice, and
competition.
And as I've said, Steve, I take you at your word that's not at all the intention of this group nor the document. I just wanted to flag to the group that I think that metrics or other measurements can be later on attempted to be used to try to get certain outcomes out of contracted parties, and it's just an ongoing concern of contracted parties, which I think you can understand that we're sensitive to.
Of course. So let's keep our eyes open as we go through these things. But I think we've both have the intention and the explicit text in this document that attempts to prevent that, and it wasn't the mandate of the board, and it wasn't the mandate of the affirmation commitments to bring about that result. So I don't think anybody in this group has that intention, although, Mason, I know that some of those intentions exist, the organizations you say, and everybody on this call probably is in varying levels of agreement with those other efforts. They're not this one, I believe.
Right. Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Why don't we move on to page 9 and start trying to roll through these different categories?
Jonathan, Cheryl's hands up real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Barry. That's why you need to keep us honest here, Barry, because you can't chair calls and manage so many things at the same time all that easily. I just thought while Mason raised that issue, it's appropriate to put sort of on the formal record that we continually need to remind ourselves and everyone looking at us that this work is preamble and preparatory to the review team of the futures work. And their issues, Mason, that you have to bring up with them.
Yes. All right. Well, that's perfect. Why don't we...
Page 9.
Why don't we dig in? Barry, do you want to scroll us forward here to page 9, the beginning of the metrics?
So what we're viewing is the version that Michael had just sent out to the group. So I believe it contains the changes suggested from Steve and from Michael.
Okay. And as we go along, we'll see a few things that we'll bring up some things that that Jeff Newman has had as feedback as well.
Great. So as the one who tried to dump this in, what I did on page 9 was to acknowledge that we had some feedback with respect to open versus closed, and to try to suggest a concrete objective definition of what is closed. And what I focused on was the registry code of conduct. That's known as Specification 9. And I've suggested that if a TLD operator requested and was granted the exemption to Specification 9, well, that's what allows them to close the TLD, their own registrar if they wish, but it also allows them to own domain names for their own account, for them and for their affiliates. They cannot transfer control of the domain name to any third party. So I think that the cleanest definition of close, when I went through the guidebook, is an exemption to Specification 9. There's really only one other time it's mentioned, and that is the discussion of the registry contract, where they talk about what happens at the termination of a TLD, that if a TLD shut down, that ICANN gets to take the zone and redelegate it. But in that section of the contract, it says that if it's solely used for their own purposes and their own registrants, sort of a single registrant TLD, that the TLD would not be redelegated unless the TLD operator wanted it to be. So other than that, you're not going to find the word closed or brand or open in the guidebook, and you're really only going to find this distinction in Specification 9. So I wanted to put that out for discussion to see whether you think this is an appropriate way to distinguish it, and remind everybody that a community TLD would not be considered closed. Because registrants and users can go to a community TLD, and the registrants just have to satisfy the conditions of the community to get in. But they are, in fact, third parties, whereas a closed has really no third parties. I'll stop there. We'll take a cue on this.
Makes sense, Michael?
Yeah, just by way of explanation, what I was trying to do in my suggested revisions was just clarifying, perhaps for myself and then also possibly for publication, what I understood that Steve was getting at. In looking at it, there are a couple of additional things, for perhaps for clarification, and thank you, Steve, for pointing out the fact that these are terms that are not otherwise defined, although I think they're widely understood. But I think in this, in the second paragraph here, where it says, in whatever way, to maintain all domain name registrations, perhaps for clarity's sake, to use the terminology, all second-level domain name registrations.
And then that isn't what it says in the registry code of conduct. It says all domain name registrations in the TLD. It doesn't say all second.
Okay, then if we said all domain name registrations in the GTLD.
I know that could be second and third level. The way it's written, I wouldn't say that we know it's second only.
Right. Well, however it's stated, if we could adopt that language, as it stands, all domain name registrations, domain name is rather loosely used elsewhere, I think, including the language, as you were pointing out, would be the way to do it. You said that it reads domain name registrations in the GTLD?
In the TLD.
Okay. Then I would just add in the TLD after registrations.
Okay. Maintain all domain name registrations in the TLD.
Yeah.
And what I had was for their own exclusive use. And that, again, is exactly verbatim is what's in the what's in there, the words own exclusive use. You have added, or a closed group of entities, and that's not in there.
Right, and actually, I think that could be removed because their own exclusive use, if they so decide to also grant domain names to, as you said, affiliates or other entities, that's their decision, but it's under their control. So I think we could take out the or a closed group of entities. That's fine.
And thanks, Michael. And Barry, would you be holding the pen, or should I? How are we doing this?
I've got the pen.
Okay, so would you please add after domain name registrations, you would say, in the TLD, for their own exclusive use.
Got it.
Their own exclusive use, and take out Michael's change there. Now, Michael, I added a sentence rather than make one long sentence. I added the sentence that the conditions and criteria to grant the exception are set forth in paragraph 6 of the Code of Conduct. Is it really necessary to smush that into the previous sentence and lose the conditions and criteria?
No. Keeping it separate in the way that you described where you're pulling this from, I think it makes sense to keep it to two sentences that you have.
And, Michael, you weren't in Toronto, so you wouldn't have known this, but there was quite a lively debate in the public forum on what the conditions are to grant the exception. Because the third condition talks about it, that it would be in the public interest to grant this exemption. So I and several folks, including Olivier, went to the mic to discuss that in Toronto because ICANN doesn't really have a definition for what public interest is to grant this exemption. That's not for us to worry about in this particular document, but I'm sort of clarifying, Michael, why I had it as a separate sentence.
Okay, thank you. And that was one portion of the public forum that I did miss. I think lunch came along at that time.
And then, Michael, you're right about the word do as a typo on my part. And as you walk down into the four definitions, it may be that this group will conclude as we walk through the metrics, you may conclude we don't need the closed brand and closed keyword distinctions. I have them in there because when we looked at the metrics, I thought that brands, in some at least two cases, brands are different than keyword. So when we move ahead to them, you'll see where that's used. If you, as a team, decide you don't need them, we'll be able to simplify this definitions page.
Yeah, I do have a question there in both of those definitions where we use the terminology recognized trademark. I'm not quite sure what that means, and also determining whether or not something is a trademark is an additional burden in the analysis obtaining and reporting portion of it. And I'm just
Mike,
wondering.
Do you have a better way of getting at the idea of a brand, of how to describe .newstar? I mean, this is a little bit like because this is not a legal document we're creating here. This is a sort of know it if you see it thing.
Right.
We kind of know what the brand TLDs are, and this is just a way to kind of write down.
Well, that's why I'm sort of wondering if, I mean, by putting in the term recognized
contract or something,
that suggests it's either recorded in the TMCH or it's registered or something else, whereas if you just say trademark, that leaves it open to interpretation. And also, when the actual review team gets together, they can determine what it is that they want to do to determine when it's a trademark or not.
Well, Michael, this is Steve. Everybody says a brand TLD in the ICANN community, and there are people even publishing lists of the brands. And in almost every case, mm-hmm. it's a recognized trademark brand. They range from the really specific, like Google and Microsoft, the word Kindle, the word Amazon, and I know that Amazon also refers to a country. Apple is Apple Computer. I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows what we mean by this brand, and there's a risk that if we make this more complex, it will imply that we're trying to create a new distinction.
It's Jonathan. I think I agree with Michael here. It's actually less complex to simply remove the word recognized. By putting the qualifier recognized in there, it just leaves someone to make a subjective judgment what recognized is. I think if you just simply say trademark, you've got it.
Oh, if that's what Michael was suggesting, I welcome that edit.
Yes, that's exactly what I was suggesting.
Okay, well, that's fine.
Barry, we could remove recognized on the third definition.
Got it.
Sorry,
all right,
Mike,
why don't we move on to the table?
You're going to make it more complicated, not less so. So we apologize for jumping to that conclusion.
Yeah, that's right.
Any other comments on the definitions? Should we dive into their use then?
Yes, the first set of metrics under consumer trust. And the first one in here that we've suggested is that service availability should only apply to open TLDs. And this was, in fact, the example that Jeff Newman cited in the email he sent all of us the day before we all went up to Toronto. And, you know, and Jeff was very respectful and grateful for the work we had done, but he did point out this example, that .newstar wouldn't necessarily – actually, he didn't point this out. I pointed out to him. That's right. That .newstar wouldn't have to keep its registrar portal open to the same degree of service reliability because the public doesn't use it. There are no public registrars allowed to register in .newstar, so they may or may not bother to keep their EPP SRS up at the 98% uptime. Any comments on this? Are we all good with it?
All good.
Great. 1.4, there's a comment in here in blue, and I'll let Michael Graham explain what he had in mind here.
One thing I was trying to do as I was looking through these, insofar as we are distinguishing where we're necessary between grand TLDs and open TLDs, is where it might be appropriate to signal that we are looking at one or the other or at both. And this was one of the very few, I must admit, spots that it seemed to me that it might be advisable to put something in so that it is clear that we are looking at the differences between user experiences in these various types of TLDs. I don't know that it's necessary, but it seemed like an appropriate place to put it as, again, a signal, and also a signal insofar as there are really no separate metrics that we've established for governing and taking a look at the effect of the brand gTLDs on consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. But by placing it as a suggested area of review in this survey that we have suggested, seemed to me to be appropriate to find out what that experience might have meant to these qualities to Internet users and registrants. So that's why I thought including this as one of the areas to explore in the survey might be useful.
Okay. Evan, do you have a comment on that?
I also did on 1.3. I've had my hand up for a bit, but I'm actually opposed to this change. I don't think there needs to be a distinction made. I think the kind of metrics that are in 1.4 apply to everything. I don't think we need to apply extra ones to close brand TLDs. Frankly, I just think this injects some bias into the paragraph. We should be able to do a survey of all of them. I don't think we should have to treat closed ones separately in this, and I really don't see a reason to single them out. And on 1.3, I'm a little hesitant about putting that in, and mainly because if we want to go back to the example of .newstar, .newstar may be for the exclusive use of Newstar and its associates, but it's accessible and its URL is usable by anyone in the world. So you could you could conceivably have a situation where an episode of abuse points back to a .newstar URL. Newstar may not be aware of it, but there has to be some way that the public can point out, or that they have to be able to track it down, they have to be able to point it out, and there has to be some public confidence in the ability to do that. I would agree in limiting 1.3 to open TLDs only if .newstar was inaccessible to the public. It isn't inaccessible to the public. Any URL in any browser will be able to point to a .newstar URL, and it will work. The fact it can only be registered to Newstar's internal organization does not eliminate the fact that it can be reachable from outside Newstar, and therefore I would not...
Is it related to being reachable, or is it related to making registration available?
I couldn't hear that, Jonathan. And this is Steve. Keep in mind that 1.3 has nothing to do with resolutions by end users.
That's
it has to do with registrar interfacing with the registry.
But I think your point.
Okay, there's two people talking at once. I can't hear what's going on.
Don't talk yet. I guess my question to you, Evan, I get your point generally. I don't get how you're applying it to 1.3.
Okay. Now that I'm seeing specifically, okay. All right. I might have a problem elsewhere. 1.3 is too technically specific. I don't have a problem with that. But I'll stand by my objection in 1.4 that I don't think closed has to be singled out.
Okay.
Jonathan,
Steve, and
the
what you said is an overarching thing that definitely brands need to be a part of consumer trust. I think that's something we can all agree on, and we should be careful not to let them off the hook, sort of as it were, generally speaking. But if it's something specific to registrations, then
I agree. Because we have a situation in which the public is going to be able to access them. They may not be able to register them, but the public is going to be able to access them. And so if this is a matter of public trust, then we need to be able to deal with every domain that can be reachable by the public, which may extend to things that they can't register, but they can certainly get at.
That's exactly right. Steve, do you have another comment?
Yes, I'd like to agree with Evan. It doesn't make sense to call out closed brand in this way. By calling it out, it implies that the rest of this paragraph didn't apply to closed brands. Oh, but they all do. This survey would be of users and registrants, and users do visit everything, not just closed brands, but closed keyword. Registrants, and it wouldn't make sense to survey registrants on their experience in a closed brand TLD anyway, because registrants can't register in a closed brand TLD. So, Michael, I think we get at it by not mentioning this, but instead understanding that 1.4 covers all. And that's why we didn't want to put any qualifier in here. So I would agree with Evan on that.
Yes.
Me too.
And I
need another
Michael,
I the Apple, Michael, or does that make sense?
I'm sorry, say again, John.
I was just saying, do you need another bite at that apple, or do what Evan and Steve make sense?
No, what they say makes sense. I could live with that, and with that understanding.
All right, perfect. So we're going to leave in open TLDs only in 1.3, and we're going to remove Michael's additional sentences, Barry, from 1.4.
Yep.
And then let's keep going.
Yep, happy with that.
This is Barry. I got it.
This is Steve. On 1.5, Jeff Newman had a question. But 1.5 is the uptime for things like Whois. And Jeff Newman pointed out that all of the new TLDs have to be thick Whois. Why is the uptime of a registrar service relevant? Mason, you and Robinson are on the call. Help us out with this with respect to thick Whois. We still had the impression on this working group that the registrar had to maintain the uptime.
Give me one second.
Because the SLA is in the registrar accreditation agreement, as far as I know.
So if I understand if I understand 1.5 correctly, what we're looking for here is a measurement of uptime for registrar-facing services, right? Who is contact, complaints. Assuming that SLAs are established for these measures in the new RAA, you mean in
That's
the new
right.
RAA there would be SLAs for us to maintain or for registries to maintain?
No, the registrar.
I see what you're saying.
And the reason I have three of them in there, I have Whois, I have the contact info because I have heard law enforcement talk about the need for registrars to be reachable.
Yeah.
They have to have a reachability for their contact, the 24/7 contact.
Yep.
And registrars have to maintain a complaint intake facility that has to be up so
Correct.
That they can take complaints on names they have registered. Word Whois, contact info, and complaints were three of the things we heard about in the RAA. And we're suggesting that if those things get negotiated in the RAA and they have uptime SLAs in the RAA, then those should be measures of consumer trust.
Yep.
Yeah, and you'll forgive me because I'm not part of the negotiating team and I haven't seen the latest draft. But if I recall, the last time I think we had a discussion on who is SLAs, I don't remember an agreement that that we had to have an SLA in there, because generally it's up all the time anyway. But let me see if I can find out. I'll try to find out before the end of the call.
All right, and Newman's point is just to strike the word who is. He understood the need to retain contact info and complaints, because there was discussion of having those in the RAA. And if they don't make it to the RAA, this one will be disregarded by those who come after us at defining metrics for the affirmation review team. This one will be non-applicable if the RAA doesn't have a service-level agreement for these three elements.
Steve, can you hear me? It's Jonathan Robinson.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Steve, I think I'm with Jeff on this. I think you've made it pretty clear, to the extent that these are measures in the new RAA, to the extent that they're not, they get struck off. But nevertheless, it is. I can't see how WHOIS would be if we are on a thick WHOIS system. So it's just the contradiction of having registrar services and WHOIS when we're defaulting to thick WHOIS. So I think if you remove WHOIS, if that was what Jeff was suggesting, from my point of view, and not speaking on behalf of the registrars, that's we're good to go.
I would agree.
I have a technical question then. During the initial new TLDs, do you mean to say that registrars will not offer any WHOIS for the thick GTLDs? It just, they will not be required to even return answers to that. That surprises me.
I don't know if that's the case, Steve. I'm sorry. I would have to find out the details. I don't. From a market point of view, I can't imagine that we wouldn't make WHOIS available for all TLDs.
That's exactly what I'm guessing, because you already do.
Right. So I just don't know if it's required. I'm not sure that it is.
So, Mark. I don't know for sure that we take this out.
Well, and again, this is a such-as kind of list as well, and so I'm not sure that making this decision now is that important, because it's about registrar services. So if there might be something that needs to be on this list that isn't, and something that is that need not be, based on the outcome of the RAA agreement, I'm not sure it's something we need to resolve. Registrar services is what this metric's about, not specifically what they are. Those are just examples.
Mason, as the representative for the registrars, would you we'll actually assign this to you, and you can get back to us. It doesn't even have to be on this call in the next couple of days. And if you guys are not required to maintain WHOIS, fine, take it out. But I would think you've had to retain it, because not all of it's going to be thick, and you're still going to have the service available.
I'll find out. Steve, this is Barry. I mean, instead of actually doing the action item, why don't we just put pending RAA negotiations? Because, I mean, it's so elusive at this point anyway, we can't nail this one down.
It already says it, Barry. I mean, that's...
Well, it says assuming, so why don't we change it to if these SLAs are established, if SLAs are established for these measures in the new RAA. So take out the words assuming that and replace it with the word if. How does everyone feel about that?
I don't think it makes any difference.
Right.
I don't mean to be disagreeable, but I think this thing's already worded correctly to accommodate all those outcomes.
This is Evan. I absolutely agree with that. I mean, the whole point behind a such as, as has already been said, is that it is a set of examples. Either take out the whole such as clause or leave it in. I mean, it's just giving examples. It's not exclusive. It's not exhaustive.
No objection from me, Jonathan Robinson.
And Cheryl here, I'd prefer the such as clauses left in, but obviously...
Right, but we weren't discussing such as. I was suggesting the words assuming that could be changed to the word if.
Yep.
That has the same meaning in this context. I vote just to leave it alone. Unless anybody's got a objection. Let's move on.
There is one question mark that Jeff Newman asked me about, 1.6 and 1.7. Thanks, Barry. 1.6, all that Newman asked me was, why are these not the same as or lower as opposed to significantly lower? But I'll just answer Jeff that that's the working group felt that significantly lower was necessary. And then Jeff asks a question on 1.7. On 1.7, Jeff Newman thinks it should only apply the breach notices to registrars with respect to the new GTLDs. So in the second line of 1.7, the relative incidence of breach notices issued to registrars with respect to the new GTLDs. Not an open or closed, but just all the new ones. If we're evaluating the new program and it turns out that some registrars are having breaches with respect to old legacy GTLDs, we probably shouldn't count them. I think that's a pretty good catch. All would agree?
Yeah. This is Evan. I don't.
Why?
Look, what are we measuring here? We're measuring consumer trust. Consumers aren't making a distinction between old and new. Consumers are looking at the whole ecosystem. And splitting hairs like this, you know, it may serve industry. It's not serving, to me, the public interest. Because if this is supposed to be a measure of public trust, if this is to be a matter of the people that use the Internet, not the people that buy or sell domains, they're not making that distinction. And I don't think it helps anything in that regard to split hairs like that.
Evan, look at 1.7. All of these on this page in front of you are comparing the new GTLDs with the legacy.
Right.
So I don't disagree with you. Consumers don't care, but the point is the affirmation review does care. The affirmation review is supposed to look at whether the expansion promoted consumer trust. So we do, all over this document, we measure the new GTLDs, activity in the new, and we compare it to the contemporaneous activity in the legacies.
But is the can you absolutely be assured that the expansion is not going to have any effect of breaches in the legacy TLDs?
Well, the beauty of this measure is that we would say count up all the breach notices to registrars with respect to their activity in the new, and then compare that to the incidents on the legacies.
Which means you have to measure both. Which means you have to measure both, and you can't just draw a line at saying we're only measuring one. You're absolutely right.
No, we do measure. We do draw the line. We drew the line on nearly every single metric in here. We draw a line.
I understand, but what you're saying
is to make it a little clearer. And this might be true of more than just 1.7. There might be several on this page. We almost infer that the measures refer only to the new GTLDs. We almost infer that, and maybe there are more places we should say it. The 1.7 is one place where we would say that relative incidence of breach notices with respect to the new GTLDs, that's the measure, and look at the target. The target is it should be significantly lower than the relative incidence in legacy TLDs.
Steve, it's Michael. Let me raise my hand, and I agree with Evan as I'm thinking of this, because the measurement is not of only the new GTLDs, it's of the DNS, that introducing the new GTLDs will have these particular effects, not in the GTLD space alone, in this case at least, 1.7, but in the system itself. So that we're not looking, I would go along with Evan, we're not looking only at the new GTLDs, we're looking at the entire system.
You're right, and that's exactly what it says. 1.7 says you would measure breach notices that registrars have with respect to the new, and our goal is that the breach notices there is significantly lower than the breach notices those registrars are having with the legacy GTLD.
Yep.
Then if the issue is clarification, then it's then the clarification actually needs to be stated in the target, not in the measure. So what you're saying is if it's clarity, you're saying significantly lower. What's significantly lower? Incidences in the new TLDs. So what you're actually advocating for is a change in the wording of the target, not in the measure.
I guess it's either or, Evan. If we change it in the measure, then the target is about the measure. And that's typically the way we've done it, is that we make the measure as explicit as we can, and then the target simply refers to that measure.
Okay. I'm just saying right now, if somebody wanted to be nitpicky, I'd say right now the target is, it says significantly lower. What's significantly lower?
The relative incidence of breach, I guess, is in 1.7.
It wouldn't make sense to repeat, like Cheryl just said, to repeat the entire text of 1.7 in that skinny little target column. In all cases, the target column refers to the measure that's in the first column.
Okay. I see where you're getting at, and I guess I can withdraw my objection to this. I just don't want this to result in a situation where only the new ones are being measured, because in order to be able to have that target, you have to measure both.
Well, and when we talk about the relative incidence, Evan, that I think that implies measuring both.
Mm. Okay.
At delta, we'll need both numbers.
Okay, then
ironically, 1.6 all the way through 1.10 are identical in this regard.
Yeah.
And so we wouldn't do Newman's change just to 1.7. We either leave it alone, explain it in a footnote, assume that readers would have gotten it by now, but it doesn't make sense to change just 1.7 and not the rest on this page.
Yeah, you're right. I'd much prefer it, if that's the issue, then make it explicit rather than a footnote that you've got to read elsewhere.
And by making it explicit, are you thinking that each of these, 1.6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, would each have the words with respect to new GTLDs somewhere in the text?
What about making it clear in that header in gray right above? Because it's applying to all of these. Measures related to confidence that new GTLD operators are fulfilling their stated promises. Or is that still being a little too subtle?
Well, they're not all operators. 1.7 is registrars. You know what I mean? So it's not all operators. Sometimes it's the registrar serving the new. You know, if I explain this to somebody like Jeff, and Mason, you're new to this. Now that you've seen the explanation, it's clear that all five of these metrics are going to measure it for the entirety of the domain space. And
yeah.
The target is that the news would be significantly lower than the legacies.
May I get in?
Please.
Mason speaking. When this was crafted, was it with the understanding that breaches would be related to provisioning of TLDs, or that they may be related to other issues?
All breach notifications should be counted in 1.7. That's the text.
Okay, because I don't know that breach notices have to do specifically with individual TLDs, right? So if you've got breach notices for registrars now in legacy TLDs, there may be a breach across old and new, and it's the same breach, right? So I may be in breach of some provision of the RAA, but it's not specific to the TLDs that I offer.
It could be.
On the other hand, I'll bet there are breach notices that are referencing a specific TLD. I'm positive that
there absolutely can be. There could be references, in fact, to individual domains.
And I think that distinction is easy to make when the time comes. Because, again, all of this information is going to be tracked. I mean, that's Barry's comment that I guess I want to reiterate, is that all this, once we establish things to be measured, they're not going to pick and choose what to measure. They're going to pick and choose what to analyze and report on when it comes to the review team. So they can certainly exclude breach notices that are not TLD-specific.
I have a suggested a solution to this that I think may be not very wordy and may address what you need, and I'm going to go back to the target. And for adding three words to each of them, significantly lower for new GTLDs than blah, blah, blah. because we're repeating relative, we're repeating basically the same thing across 1.6 to 1.10 anyway. So if you just add the words after lower for new TLDs, for new gTLDs, essentially you're accomplishing what Jeff is suggesting across the board on these.
So that would read significantly lower for new gTLDs than or compared to legacy gTLDs.
Yep.
Significantly lower for new gTLDs
than for legacy gTLDs.
And for legacy TLDs.
Hang on, Cheryl here. I have no problem with those modifications as they're heading, but I do have, I think, an almost painful memory of bludgeoning the words relative incidence into these. So let's make sure we don't throw babies and bathwaters out together.
Yeah, great point. Anytime in, if we made Evan's change, then we have to make sure that each of the metrics in column one have the word relative incidence. Because relative incidence, for the newcomers on the call, is all about relative to the total population. When it has to do with domains, it's the relative population of registrations. You know, when it has to do with TLDs, it's the relative population of TLDs.
Well, that's Michael, and I note that 1.8 does not include those terms over in the measure.
Right. So, this is Steve, and I think Evan's got a good fix here. We would change 1.8 to say relative incidence of registry and registrar general complaints instead of quantity, and then change all of the targets to say, well, not all of them say significantly. Two of them say significantly. The other three just say lower.
Yeah, just add the new G's in there, but don't ditch relative incidence.
Oh,
I agree with Cheryl.
Because relative incidence is in the metric column, Cheryl. I guess that's...
Not in 1.8.
I know, but I was just recommending we change 1.8.
Got it.
To say relative incidence instead of quantity. And if we do that, they're all identical.
Yeah.
And that all the targets can read either significantly lower or lower for new gTLDs than for legacy gTLDs. And that way that the target reads simply and it always refers back to whatever's in column one, which in all cases will be relative incidence.
And the clarity that Jeff wants, it will be there.
I think so. That's a good fix,
okay.
Evan. Barry, does that make any sense to you?
This is Barry. I made those changes. So 1.8 now says relative incidence, and each of the targets have four new gTLDs.
You retained the words significantly lower or the word lower.
Yes.
You took out than relative incidence in.
No.
Yeah. Under the target column, it would now say the word significantly lower or lower. Then the word for new gTLDs than for legacy gTLDs. Right, Evan?
Right.
Here you go.
May I make one additional suggestion? This is Tobias speaking. In terms of 1.7, we still have this last sentence, all breach-related notifications should be counted. And I've just looked at some recent examples of breach notices, and one I found where it said that this is a notice because you didn't pay and because there was an incident or some problem with a .org domain name. So that's perhaps an example of what is out there. So there might be breach notices that are only for failure to pay money and others that are related to specific domains. So my suggestion would be to amend the last sentence of the first column of 1.7 to say that all breach-related notifications should be counted, provided that they include a specific top-level domain. This way, we would disregard those that are only for failure to pay. Would that make sense?
Yeah, sometimes the breach would be a group of TLDs and not just one. And I think, Tobias, this is Steve, I think what you said makes good sense. The reason we have the words all breach-related notifications is that there are often a series of notifications, an early warning, an escalation, and then a final warning. Compliance got on the phone and explained that to us. And that's what we meant by all notifications. It's at every stage of the breach process, not just a final breach notice. So if we could keep this language and just supplement it with, as you said, all breach-related notifications should be counted, provided they make specific reference to one or more GTLDs. Barry, does that make sense?
Can you repeat that once more, then?
At the end of the words, all breach, this is 1.7, I'm really just echoing what Tobias said. I do think it makes sense. All breach-related notifications should be counted, comma, provided they reference one or more GTLDs. Or you could say the word GTLD and put the S in parens, provided they reference GTLDs.
Okay, got it.
That gets to what you wanted, Tobias, right?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Any other comments for page 11?
Let's go to 12.
Hi, it's Jonathan. This is my 1.9 comes in here. Should I fire away with 1.9?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Right, so, you know, I was prompted to revisit this by looking at Wendy's comments. And, you know, some of you may remember the background to this more clearly, so you, by all means, if I go off track here, let me know. There's two thoughts I've got on this. The first is on the use, and it's italicized, so it's clearly intended to be that way, is the use of the word complaints. Because when I think about this, really we're talking about this is to Wendy's point, I suppose. A complaint simply is the incidence of a complaint. Really what we should be concerned about is successful decisions, complaints that lead, let's just stick with the UDRP for a moment, complaints that lead to a successful UDRP decision in favor of the complainant.
But Jonathan, please quickly look at 1.10. We have both in here on purpose.
I apologize. Right. So that wasn't my – and then that's great. So if that's okay, fair enough, Steve. That's fine. Thank you. I'm sorry. Second point. The threshold for UDRP and a URS is quite substantially different. Now, my commercial experience is that in some cases, let's take a notional threshold for a UDRP of, say, $5,000. It might be as much as $10,000. To process a UDRP when all the advice and everything is taken into account. Some complainants or brand owners who've been infringed may take a view that the commercially more pragmatic approach is to simply pay $1,000 to the cyber squatter and move on. So the price makes a difference. And clearly the URS is priced quite differently to the UDRP. So I wonder about bundling these two and whether we shouldn't say something different which says the relative incidence of UDRP complaints and then make a point that the incidence of URS being a new mechanism should be considered in this context as well or should be monitored alongside it. My simple concern is bundling the two. Steve, correct me if I'm going over old ground here.
It is, and it is old ground, and as you quite correctly identified, this is all about comparing the expansion of the program versus the pre-expansion world or the legacy GTLDs, and you can't compare these on an apples-and-apples basis, because in the new GTLDs, URS will be used sometimes instead of UDRP, and we cannot do URSs in the legacy GTLDs. So we have to compare our apples and oranges against their apples to get an equivalent quantity of complaints with respect to cyber squatting. And we knew going in that this would be a problem, and that's why we wrote that explanatory text in 1.9.
Yeah, okay, Steve. Look, I'm going to back off on this one. I'm not going to die in a ditch over it by any means, but having reread it, it does strike me that my preference would be to have relative incidence of UDRP and then to monitor URS as opposed to, as you say, putting apples and oranges in the same cart. I'd be more comfortable with comparing apples with apples and saying, but by the way, oranges may influence this mark as well, so we should monitor them.
But that means count them.
Right.
That means count them. And it isn't apples and apples to compare UDRP and the new GTLD, since the whole design of URS is to discourage the use of UDRP and do it more quickly through a URS. So we do expect the UDRPs to go down, relative incidence, that is, in the new GTLD. Yeah, because what you're suggesting is measure them all, measure all three, but don't necessarily add URS and UDRP when doing the comparison. The truth is, we only had to do this because the board asked us to do targets. Had they not asked for a target, we wouldn't necessarily have done the math of combining and would have allowed the review team to just take a look at URS and UDRP, and they probably would have added them together.
Yeah, well, I mean, they should be compared with some sophistication, I suppose, and the danger here is that there's a crude metric. Oh, UDRP plus URS is higher than UDRP previously, therefore new GTLDs are worse. And it just it simply doesn't follow that logic. But we may be stuck with that. I mean, I hear your argument, so, and I don't want to slow up this call completely on this point, and unless there's, you know, unless anyone else has support for this or a particular inspired alternative, I'll back off on it.
Now, Steve, may I?
Go for it.
Yeah. Mason speaking again. I share a bit of Jonathan's concern because I think registrar's experience is that there are parties who will intentionally over-complain with not necessarily the expectation of winning a name. I'm also a little worried about this one because I think registrars have seen mischaracterization of UDRP complaints in the market, specifically in the press, in general, that paint an inaccurate picture of what's happening with cyber squatting. Now, that's my concern, and your question is going to be, what do you want to do about it with regard to this metric? And the immediate answer is, I'm not sure. But I do agree with Jonathan. I think you've got a bit of a skewed situation here because URS and UDRP are different. You've also got a situation where complaints can be overdone and give a misimpression of the rate of abuse in a TLD.
And this is one of 60 metrics that will be taken in total to determine whether the new GTLD expansion contributed to consumer trust, choice, and competition.
Yeah, I get that. And
we can't just take it out. I mean, how could we ignore one of the quantitatively countable elements that we have at our disposal?
I'm not suggesting that we ignore it, and I completely understand that it's one of 60, but in my experience, it's one of it's a lightning rod one of 60. So, you know, like I said, I don't have an immediate suggestion, but while we're talking, I'm going to sit here and look at this for a minute.
Steve, it's Michael. Let me raise my hand. Just by way of explanation of the apples and the oranges, under the legacy GTLDs, there were only apples. So if you had a terrible situation that presumably would be covered by a URS complaint in the future, you could only bring that as a UDRP, so that the sort of complaints that you would bring under either URS or UDRP would all have been under UDRP. So although we now have oranges and apples, before they were all mixed together and we called them all apples. So,
wait,
to the and that was one reason why we included the URS in this. I understand the concern about the lightning rod, but we're not putting the rod there. We're just measuring the strokes of lightning, I think. And that's something useful once we have that information going forward, which was, as Steve pointed out, one of 60 metrics that we put out there. Whether or not they utilize this or not, it's one that we're putting there on the table as something that they should consider. And what is made of it later, we also don't have any control over. But in attempting to set some, set the recipe, or I guess the menu, not the recipe, the menu from which the review commission group can choose putting this out.
I think that's exactly right, Michael. We need to get at get data tracked and make sure that they're not left trying to scramble to find information to use down the road. Evan had his hand up. Evan.
Hi, I just want to suggest that maybe the little explanatory note on 1.9 maybe could be moved to a footnote or something and expanded a little. I think we can acknowledge that it's not an exact comparison, that the number of UDRPs in one is not going to be the equivalent of the UDRPs in the other, because now you have this lightweight addendum that's possible. By the same token, just adding them all together isn't going to be an equivalent. Can we not just sort of acknowledge and document the fact that it's not an exact comparison, explain a little bit about the distinction that would assist the reader in understanding that as some explanatory text, and just leave them be?
Yes, I think we could probably do that.
but if the explanatory text is no different than the text in the box, Evan, it was you who said earlier you didn't want us to add a bunch of footnotes when we could put the text right in the box.
if it can be done in few enough words, fine. I
can't even imagine what words we could change in that little explanation. It's a factual statement that the URS is required only in new. And so maybe we do this. Here's a proposal. So combined UDRP and URS complaints could be, as opposed to should be. So we reveal the fact that we're making a recommendation for a review team that hasn't even been formed yet and will take 2 weeks at least to figure out what it wants to do with the data. Why not say could be compared instead of should be?
Or this is Michael, or may be compared.
May be comparable. How about that? May be comparable to.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. To me, that's getting to the point of splitting hairs, but I'm okay with that. I just didn't want to see this tossed. I think we need, as long as we can make the point that they're not absolute equivalents, because fewer people are going to be using UDRPs in the new ones, we would anticipate. And since the UDRP is a fallback to a URS, you could have more of them because somebody might do both. So, you know, it's maybe a little bit more complex than we're alluding to here, but that's probably going to be at the time that the metrics are produced. I think with what you're suggesting, we've covered that here.
Great. It's in the chat. Anybody has any objection to what's in the chat?
All good.
Next page.
Maybe update.
I'm on controller. Thank you.
Mr. Controller.
I'm confused.
Newman had asked me about 1.11.
That's better. Good.
the very first paragraph, it said IP claims and cost of domain name policing. His comment was, not sure what an IP claim is. So, Michael Graham, you are the author of this section. Is it evident to everyone on the phone what an intellectual property claim is?
Yes.
Is there a more precise word you can use? Cases? Enforcement? Or is the word claim the term of art?
Yeah, I guess, Mason speaking, I guess I am a bit unclear about that. An IP claim, is that, you know, against a registry or a registrar or against a registrant?
Oh, no. It is not registry, registrar. It could be against the registrant, Mason. More likely, it would be the registrant.
And those are laid out in that subsection 1.
Against registrants, against registrars, blah, blah, blah. I'd have thought claim was the right term, but
I think it maybe it's just I need to explain it to Jeff, and that would handle it. And then Jeff also said in 1.11, item 3, he suggested we put the word demonstrable in front of the word cost, the demonstrable cost of domain name policing.
May I just ask a question on this one, Steve? Or Jonathan, I'm not sure. And Michael, if you were the author. I mean, it strikes me that typically, and what we mean, I think, by an IP claim here is a claim by a brand owner against a registrant who is infringing their brand. And what I think we're trying to identify here is how many of those occur through a particular registrar or through a particular registry. I think the claim is less likely to be made against the registrar or against the registry. Typically, one is making the claim or the complaint, if you like, against the registrant. But I can see how some might find it useful to know whether there was a higher incidence of those complaints with registrants who were using a particular registrar or registry, but whether or not those claims would be against the registrar or against the registry is perhaps that's the terminology issue.
Mm-hmm. Michael Graham, were you all right with putting demonstrable in front of cost?
Yeah, that would be fine.
And then, Michael Graham, you have the word claims up top, you have the word claims inside, but also you have cases in the text here. Is there a difference between a claim and a case?
Wait a minute. Here we go. Hang on a sec. Oh, I would have to look back at the earlier drafting. The IP claims would be both those that are made, and this was one reason why we were looking back to the IP groups, because we were looking not only at the filed UDRP actions and not only at litigation, but also at claims.
Well, we're explicitly not looking at UDRP. They're excluded from this entire metric.
Right. So these are claims that do not become UDRPs. Cases would be actually filed cases then.
Yes.
So the claim would include either a non-UDRP or URS filing, so that would be a lawsuit, or a mere objection to it. That was one reason why we were looking to the IP-focused entities to put together a report or survey to get this information on how many claims were actually being made that did not become UDRPs, did not become URSs, did not become litigation.
Hey, I'm convinced. I'll take the responsibility of explaining this to Jeff Newman. I think we leave it alone.
Thank you, Dave.
That does make sense?
Yeah, it does. I get it. In 1.13, this is security breaches. Newman asked that we clarify the end of 1.13 to say the words at the registry. Does it the breach if the breach happened at a client or customer, it wouldn't count at all. It's the data security breach at the registry.
Fair call.
But that's what he's asking for.
That makes sense.
Fair call to me, yep.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Next page.
Hang on. Yeah. Something's wrong. We dispensed with that awfully quickly.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. Everybody's getting tired.
I don't think we have quite the stamina that we did in the old days.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, God, just get
on this next one.
Come on. Grab your coffee. Keep going.
This is Barry. So back to 113, data breaches only at the registry?
No, not the word only.
Just at the registry.
You know, but why would we limit it to the registry? I think our point was it could be registrars as well. The registrar has a data breach, all those credit card numbers get out.
Yeah.
Right. Or the root servers get hacked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so at registries and registrars.
Got it.
On 1.20, these are complaints. Do we mean complaints to ICANN? That's the official ICANN-filed complaints, right? Inaccurate, invalid, and suspect WHO records. All those complaints are made to ICANN, aren't they?
Correct, through the InterNIC system, which is evolving.
Okay, so Newman asks that we clarify by saying complaints to ICANN or filed with ICANN. How about that? Filed with ICANN.
Yes. I'm happy with that, even though the source is clearly ICANN, yes. Belts and braces is not a problem there.
In the ICANN context, aren't IP complaints really URS and UDRP? What else exists?
There's ombudsman complaints, and there are other categories available through the InterNIC system as well, and that's expected to expand with the newest system.
With the brave new world.
Okay, Barry, moving on, the footnote, Newman being a lawyer, did point up a change to the footnote that ICANN is a party to the Registry Operator Agreement and the Registrar Accreditation Agreement.
Okay, a deleted counter.
So is a party to the Registry Operator Agreement and the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. We wouldn't call it a registrar contract.
I see.
Next page?
Yeah, that's a good call. I think Barry will be typing and moving pages at the same time. We might let him take a small breath. Thank you.
Okay, now we get to the one that Jeff Newman actually had his example on October the 12th. He said that .newstar, for instance, running as a closed brand TLD, would definitely not tell aspiring registrants how to get a .newstar domain, and it wouldn't be clearly disclosed as to the benefits of getting a .newstar TLD because they're not giving them. He makes a great point, and therefore, I recommend we add the words, this measure includes open TLDs and closed keyword TLDs, but not closed brand TLDs. So I did leave in keywords like .book, et cetera, because registrants would go to a place like the .book, info.book, and they would fully expect to say, how do I get a book? And I think registrants and users ought to know if Amazon wins .book and they run it closed as a closed keyword TLD, I do think that should be on the website as an important transparency element, but not for a .newstar, not for a .google.
This is Evan, and I'm going to be contrary again for the same reasons I said earlier. If someone goes to a .newstar, there should be somewhere where on that site or somewhere where there is a recognized place where somebody can go to say, well, I'd like to get a .newstar, and there has to be a message saying, no, you can't, or here are the restrictions. And so maybe the word benefits is moot, but restrictions definitely are, and I don't think that should be. I don't think Newstar should get off, get a pass from that. They have an obligation to say somewhere that if you want that, if there's a TLD called .newstar, and if someone wants something in it, there has to be at least information somewhere publicly accessible that says, no, you can't. I don't think that brands get a pass on this.
Evan, this is Michael, and I wonder if, although not initially the idea behind it, but the, and I don't know if you're looking at the meeting online with the proposed paragraph. It's actually a proposed new metric that was looking at closed brand TLDs. If that might not be a specific one that would cover that sort of concern that you just expressed within those closed brand TLDs. Because I think the same interest runs across with the, whatever we call them, recognized brands, that when I come to the site, something within that statement should be made as to what the restrictions may be on that site or within that registry. But I think there's a good point in that they're going to be quite different from the very transparent type of statements that should be expected with the open TLDs. When you move to a closed, so I would divide it somehow, perhaps.
My opinion is that we're over engineering this. 2.1 said clearly disclose benefits and restrictions, and if those restrictions mean we are closed TLD and you can't have something, that satisfies 2.1. We've had to go into all these definitions that may not even be necessary by just saying, you know, If something is a closed TLD, they answer that question differently from an open one, but the question doesn't need to change.
If I go to www.newstar.com, they don't disclose how I'm not allowed to get a third-level domain. So, I mean, again, this is a web page for a company.
But that's not about newstar.com. That's about something.newstar. And I do believe, as a matter of public interest, that there is a need somewhere under something.newstar, there has to be a publicly accessible piece of information that says this is private to our associates and outsiders can't have one. I think, as a matter of public interest, that needs to exist. And if Jeff has a problem with real estate on his webpage, I'm sorry, that's not sufficient deterrent to needing something in the public interest.
Evan, Cheryl here. So you're proposing the 2.1 brackets A as a new addition into this list is not required and no change happens to 2.1? Or do you believe that with the addition of 2.1 brackets A, it meets the requirements you're concerned about? Because I'm not sure which way you're arguing now.
My original argument is actually for the former, Cheryl, that I didn't think a change was necessary. As a fallback, that I would consider suboptimal. The proposed addition could do it, but I think it's over-engineering things. It's requiring us to do definitions that otherwise we wouldn't need to do, and we're simply making the issue more complex than it need be. There's a simple question. What are the benefits and restrictions? And closed and open can answer it differently. I don't know why we have to over-engineer this.
Yeah, well, that's a different debate. But
there needs to be something. www.newstar has to have information about the Newstar TLD that's open to the public. I absolutely fervently believe that.
That might be a contractual item, but nothing in our entire paper says what a company has to do.
But we are measuring, but
year after the fact, looking back to say, did it promote choice? That's what this whole section's about.
Right.
So,
and this,
Evan, you're using words and strident argument that might have made its way into the registry contract discussion that was had a couple of years ago, but it doesn't have a place in this discussion because
okay.
we're not specifying requirements for registry.
Right.
A measurement item.
And we're and so
700 dot brands are very unlikely to say at info.newstar, here's how to get, or here's why you can't have your own DelBianco.newstar.
And I
do that.
And I and they may not be required to do that, but
they're not required to, and you and I are not in a position to put requirements because this is not where we make requirements. That should have been done 2 years ago when we did the registry contracts. It's too late for that.
You're missing my point.
We do not use this exercise to impose requirements.
You're missing my point. I fully understand the difference between metrics and requirements, and I fully understand they're not required to do so. I absolutely, though, believe that we ought to measure whether they do it or not. I understand the difference between requirements and metrics very clearly. We're here to measure, and the idea is we've got an issue here in 2.1 saying we should measure whether or not they do it.
If we leave it in, if I followed your line of thinking, this metric will be a failure because the 700 brands aren't going to do it. They're not required to, and it makes no sense in their mind, not yours, but in their mind, it makes no sense to do so. So they won't do it, and 700 of the new GTLDs will fail this metric. We do not, in any place else here, we have never got a metric in here that's designed to fail.
I'm not presupposing.
I would stridently stick with what the edit is, because I do not want to design a metric to fail. I hear all your points, and you're being normative about it. These are descriptive, not normative.
I'm
and
just
it doesn't apply to the brand.
And I'm saying the fact that something may fail doesn't mean that you ignore it. If a company wants to put if the .IBM says, okay, this is normally for IBM. If you are a VAR of IBM, here's how you go about doing it. Okay. I don't think it's a failure because I think that it's not going to be a blanket, you can't do this across the board. I think that there has to be a way that people can say for any TLD, these are the ones I can't get to, these are the ones I can, and these are the ones that have restrictions. And if the end result of that is that the bulk of them don't provide information, as a matter of public trust and confidence, that needs to be put out there. The fact that something may not produce the number. Wait, hold, let me finish. The fact that something may not produce the numbers you want is not an excuse to leave it out.
And then, Evan, consider Michael's suggestion in blue as a way to measure that metric. And then you will get your opportunity to indicate how they should disclose. But you're trying to make policy through metrics right now, and we are trying not to do that.
How I don't understand how leaving 2.1 the way it was makes policy. I simply don't. We're making it more complex, and I'm saying the simplicity actually.
You're adding a requirement that's not in the registry contract. That's why.
It's not a requirement. I'm measuring something that may be optionally done. We're going back to this. I'm not asking for requirements. I'm asking, let's measure what's being done. If they do it, they do it. If they don't, they don't. This is a metric as a matter of public trust that ought to be out there.
Steve, if I may.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Johnson, excuse me. Mason speaking. Evan, I get where you're coming from. I have to agree with Steve here. I mean, if I'm a branded TLD, I'm never going to put anything on the website that says this is the purpose of the TLD and this is who can and can't have it. And measuring that, I agree, it presupposes failure and suggests future action that needs to be taken, which I would oppose at that point anyway. Because mandating content on a website, except in the most necessary reasons, is just something that ICANN is not in the business of doing. And I definitely see going down that path because I've seen ICANN go down that path before, and it is ultimately unproductive. So I just don't, with all due respect, and I do understand where you're coming from, I just don't see this as a productive area to go down.
All right, John, do you have a comment on this? Number
yes, thank you. Yeah, I'm here. I have to, I've been thinking about what Evan's been talking about, and I'm reminded of the old adage that, you know, if you can measure it, you can manage it. But there are just some things that, even though you can count, they don't really offer you any insight. And I have to come down on the side of Steve and Mason, who's just spoken. My feeling is this is almost like, you know, we could count the number of keystrokes it takes to get to a particular site, but I'm not sure that that would offer us any meaningful insight. I think we probably should accept where we are and move on this. I just don't think it adds anything to the conversation, and I certainly don't think it adds anything to what ultimately will be viewed as the credibility of our effort, and I'm very concerned about that. I believe that there is a slippery slope. I don't know that we're on it, but I do believe that there is a slippery slope that could lead some things that we think can be counted and so therefore should be counted to lead to provide a handhold for substantive discussions that we never intended to instigate. And I think that this might be that kind of instance. So I side with Steve and Mason on this.
I was going to suggest that maybe we should just, because we need to keep going because we're running through the time, I was going to suggest everybody use the tool to vote, perhaps. Michael, do you have something else quick to add? Or?
No, actually, I think John just covered it, and I think in good part our ability to recognize that the landscape has changed from the time that we began some of this is part of the credibility of the entire study that we need to enhance and not, for want of a place for a word or a phrase, to avoid. So I would agree with Steve.
Let's quickly, if you would, just do a cast your vote if you in favor of making this distinction for brand PLDs. So that's an affirmative vote that we're not trying to manage this particular metric for brand PLDs, and just cast your vote.
I'm sorry, I'm unclear on the question again. What is it we're trying to do?
If you agree that it's
a distinction
case for brand PLDs, then cast a vote of yes, please. And Cheryl, I have yours.
Thank you.
Right. I understand. So I've got Evan, Julie, and Mason that are still concerned. Is that right? Everybody else? I think that's how I interpret this.
Julie is staff, and I thought I heard Mason side with this. Mason, are you still with us?
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Mike's confused now.
Yeah, I'm just unclear on what means yes and what means no. But if it means we don't audit closed brand TLEs for this type of content on their website, then yeah, that's okay. What I agree with.
And you should click yes, please.
Then that's a yes vote, and I think we have a preponderance here, Evan. So let's take offline a way to note your concern about this, but I think we have to move on from here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you,
Michael. Do you still want to present 2.1A or leave that go?
Actually, the more, and it's Michael here, the more that I look at 0.1A, I would like to have something like that within the metrics. However, I do not believe it has to do with choice. I believe it has to do with trust. So at this point, I would not put it in there. And if we believe that our trust metrics are strong as to the branded closed domains, I think we can live with that.
Okay.
Trust measures apply to everything. So that if the trust measures were strong, then by definition, the trust measures are strong with respect to branded TLDs. They're all applied.
Right, and I would hope that in light of the changed
geography that whoever puts together the survey will focus in part on some of the effects that having closed, branded, and open the differences, how they affect the user and the registrant experience when they do those surveys.
700 brands, closed brands, if they have a trust problem, it will show up. It'll show up in all 24 of those metrics. Aggregate, again, this is not an audit of sites in order to name names. It's an aggregate measure of the program to see if it promoted trust. And if a full third, well, I should say half, 700 out of 1,400 strings are brands. So if half of them have trust problems, Michael, you can rest assured it'll show up in the affirmation review.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. So I would remove the 2.1A.
Okay, you're going to have to forgive me, but if you're not going to accept my wanting to keep 2.1 as is, I think at very least you need to keep 2.1A, because essentially that gives the option of how to go for the closed brands. If the public is going to, and this is not just a matter of trust, it's also a matter of choice, because I think we're presupposing that a closed brand is going to have absolutely no way for anybody to get in. You could have a company that will have franchisees or VARs or other kinds of partners that would go into a quote-unquote closed TLD. So what I'm suggesting is, if you're going to make the modification to 2.1 and you're going to limit it, that there has to be something that allows this for closed brands. So there has to be a metric for 2.1A. So if you're going to go ahead and put in the change for 2.1, I really think 2.1A needs to be there, because I think you're making a presupposition on what all the brand TLDs are going to do, and I don't think that's reasonable.
Evan, it's Michael. My only question then would be, originally in the draft I put, in lieu of the open registries having a statement on their pages showing the benefits and restrictions of the site, that the test for the closed brand would be that they have the trademark of the brand and the services somewhere on their site. I wonder if that's what should be looked for, or something else should be looked for in that case.
I think that's covered in 2.1A.
Well, it is, if that's the right measure. I mean, I think the intention is good there, but I mean, that's pretty prescriptive about what should go on a brand.
Well, have a look in the chat. You now have the three people coming in from at large that are all saying and trying to come in here and represent the public interest in saying that if you're going to change 2.1, that you need 2.1A there as a matter of what the consumers and end users need from this. Take that as a sign.
I mean, it sort of gets down to definitions, because even if I allow franchise owners to be in it, that's still not public in the normal sense of the word. Those are contractual relationships. It doesn't seem like it's the overall consumer or whatever that is the normal registrant.
The consumer can still get at it. The consumer can still type in a URL at .ibm and get there. So the consumer has access to this. So as Cheryl is typing, it's a matter of transparency.
This is Michael. I think you're right, Evan. I mean, and that is the case. It is a matter of transparency, and it does relate to choice insofar as the basic purpose, or one of the basic purposes of trademarks or brands, is to offer consumers a choice between different brands and a confidence that if they go to a particular brand, or in this case a particular website, that is what they're going to find there.
Exactly.
Mason, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, go ahead then.
Just if I can understand this, if let's say I'm United Airlines and I have .United, and I want to make a point about the fact that I serve Coca-Cola, or no, I'll make it more generic, the fact that I serve soda on my flight, and I register soda.united, and I put a picture of, I don't know, a bunch of cans of soda on there,
Is that counter to what this 2.1a is intending?
I don't think it's counter. I think it's fine.
Right, because it's not saying that every page has to go there. It's that if you go to the site, just as with the open registries, yeah. We're not expecting that every site that you go to within that registry is going to have a statement of benefits and restrictions. It's just that as you go to that site, the entry, you will get that.
Yeah. Somewhere in .united needs to go to something, but certainly not everywhere in that, everywhere down that tree needs to.
So, okay, closed brand TLD should resolve to a site. Does that mean subdomains in closed brand TLDs or the top level? I guess it's just ambiguous.
But there should be a page in that TLD that presents the brand. Is that what you're getting at, Evan?
Some hands up.
Well, okay. You know, okay. My first choice, as you know, was keeping 2.1 as is. If 2.1 is changing, I'm happy with the wording of 2.1a.
Okay, Steve, what's your comment?
Evan, I want to make this work. I want to satisfy it. But the wording of 2.1a doesn't really work the way it's going there. So I have a suggestion for you and Michael to think about. I would say that 2.1a could read websites for closed brand TLDs. Websites for closed brand TLDs should include a page disclosing registration policies. And then underneath the three-year target column, like several of our metrics, it should say no target. So we want them to audit it and measure it. And we hope that the review team will do this because it's in our recommendation. But as a group, we don't want to specify that this has a target, as in all, some, or most. And I do think that Michael's saying that TLD should resolve to a site. Technically, that doesn't make that much sense because not all domain names would resolve to a site.
Yeah,
it would be
fair.
Some domain, maybe policy.
Yeah.
.newstar or info.newstar.
Okay.
I don't know which it is, but I wouldn't say all of them. That's
okay, no, I'm with you. I'm okay with that. I would still like to have a target suggest that every TLD should have some publicly accessible information about that TLD. I agree with you. You've convinced me that the wording of 2.1a is clumsy enough that it needs a little bit of rework, as you've suggested. I would not like to eliminate the target.
Okay,
what
Mason,
is it the target should be?
Mason?
I'm sorry, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm sorry, my cell phone rang and I had to take it. I'm sorry, what's the question? I apologize.
Do you have your hand up or is that left over?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, no. Let me clear that. I apologize.
Okay, Michael?
Okay, I do have my hand up. I would agree with the wording that you were proposing, Steve. What I would add is disclose or embody, because I think that you can symbolically embody what it is you're finding on that site without saying so in so many words, and I would provide for that.
Okay.
But otherwise, I would.
Sorry, Cheryl. I don't want to move on too fast from this because this really is important, but particularly with Michael's change on Steve's change, can we have an example of the text in the chat, please?
Yeah, Michael, do you want to draft a variation on Steve's text and put it in the chat?
Yeah, I'm looking at Steve's language now. Let me work on that and get back. Can we sort of pass by and come back to this in a moment?
Happy to
okay.
Loop back.
All right. Let me just suggest that the column under source should say audit of closed brand websites. Let's be consistent with our defined terms.
Yep.
And I would say moderate difficulty in auditing. There's no need to say comparing with branded goods and services. Just moderate difficulty in auditing.
And then
no 700
target.
Of them.
And then no target, correct?
Well, I'm going to try to give something to Evan on saying what should the target be? Disclosures? So all closed brand TLDs should include the disclosure. Because we're giving them the opportunity to put it someplace on the site.
Yeah. So it's sort of, it should be absent or not. I mean, it's either there or it's not, isn't it?
I guess.
Sort of Boolean.
That's right. Okay. Do you have that, Barry?
Okay, I'm still waiting for the text for the 21A.
For the other three columns of 21A, is that clear?
Yeah, I've got for source audit of closed branded websites, for the difficulty.
And it's not branded, it just says closed brand.
Yeah. It's a reference back to the definitions, Barry.
For the difficulties, I just have the moderate difficulty in auditing. And then for the three-year target was all closed brand TLDs should disclose, and I think I didn't catch the end.
I put it in the chat, should include a disclosure page, or
sure.
Include a disclosure.
Yeah, Steve, I've just revised that and put it in. Take a look.
Yeah, Michael's got language there.
I think that's fine.
Okay.
All good.
All right, so Michael's language there, Barry, is for the measure.
Perfect.
Okay, so we move on to 2.3?
Yeah, and 2.3, it picks up on 2.1. And Barry, if you're going to put it in 2.1A, we need to renumber everything from there on down, right? Because we've never used the AB nomenclature on any of our other metrics, have we?
No, I would just go ahead and have that be 2.2. And
okay, so we'll refer to the numbers that are on the screen, but Barry will end up renumbering.
Yep.
All right, so 2.3... is just like 2.1, but it doesn't get to the clear disclosure. It gets to the understandability to registrants and users. And again, because benefits are there to attract a registrant, you would not disclose the benefits of registering a name when you cannot register a name. And that's why for 2.3, I think it only makes sense to reflect what we did at 2.1 and include only closed keyword and open TLDs, but not closed brand.
This is Michael. Forgive me for not raising my hand, but it sort of begs a question because it seems to me that this would apply in either case, and it's only going to apply if the restrictions and the benefits are up there. So if they're not included, if it's not measured, then you're not measuring whether or not it's clear or not. I mean, if we want to do this, again, as an acknowledgement that we understand the difference, that's fine. But I don't think it's necessary.
That's really why, especially given that we do have to get this through council.
That's right.
Evan suggested in the chat of 2.3, the current 2.3 being redundant, I think is worthwhile.
Well, I think in one case it's measuring the actual presence of that disclosure, and the other it's a survey of consumers to see whether or not
they understand it. Okay, yep, fair enough, yep.
So I think those are probably two different things.
But, yep.
I mean,
understandable too, yep, sorry,
The problem with that, though, is how do you measure clarity? As I said in the chat, clarity is sort of an eye of the beholder kind of thing. And what's clear to one person is unclear to another. And I'm almost wondering if 2.3 is good in intent, but in execution is almost pointless, because who's going to argue over what's clear and what isn't?
Well, Evan, Cheryl, here it comes back to plain language and things like that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. So you could change, you could put in a reference instead of clearly, just say, put 2.1, registry website should disclose benefits and restrictions in plain language, and just be done with 2.3. It's just, if 2.3 gets into how clear something is, I think that's going to be an invitation for pain.
Yeah, I mean, I, again, that's probably going to be left to the design of the survey to see whether or not people had a perception that they understood it. And I think we need to be careful if we're ever going to get through this before November 15th that we don't rehash the things we've already discussed. And if we can, try to focus just on the categorization between the, you know, the different types of TLDs. So, I mean, I don't want to cut you off, Evan, but we... 2.3 is something that we already kind of decided on, and so I think if we can get through this and just sort of say, you know, this is the stuff that's related to this category versus that category, that's the exercise we're trying to do here, because I think we're going to already be pushing to another meeting. Is that okay with everybody? I'm not trying to be Attila the Hun, but I think we need to try not to retrench old ground if we can avoid it.
Agreed.
Agree, but what we do need to do is make sure language in 2.1 matches 2.3, which is what the red text does.
Agreed.
That's right. And it does, right?
Yeah. So that's a tick then from me.
Okay. So can we move on then?
This is Barry. So, were there any changes to 2.3 then?
No,
I think not.
Okay, I didn't think I heard some. No changes on page 15. Moving on to page 16.
Issue with 2.9 that's related to defensive registrations that aren't likely to occur in a closed TLD.
You know what? This is Del Bianco. I was on mute and didn't realize it, but Jeff Newman did have changes on the prior page with respect to open and closed. And in fairness, he's not on the call. I'll introduce his concepts, and then you guys can give a reaction. On 2.5, he thought that it would only apply to open TLDs, and I don't understand why that's true. I think it's all especially given that our target is just a relative improvement over 2011.
Mm.
So if the dot brands, if the 700 dot brands end up being in their own language.
Well, and the brands might very well contribute to an increase in IDN scripts, you know, over time.
Yep.
That might help the metric.
Good. We agree? 2.6? 2.6. Newman said not applicable to closed, but registrars aren't open and closed. This is the registrar website, not the registry, so I don't think Jeff Newman is understanding 2.6 correctly.
Right.
No change.
On 2.7, he said same thing. And I don't think this has anything to do with open and close. Count them all, because there's no disadvantage if a bunch of them sites do use ASCII and Latin.
I would agree. I know a number of the IDNs are brands, but we're looking at IDNs. We're not looking at anything else.
Right, and we're not comparing them.
Oh. Right, we're just trying to see if there's an increase in IDNs, and brands may very well contribute to that.
And
well, this is two things. It's an increase to trend closer to the percentage of the population. Okay, so I think his point is that if all of these Latin brands, 700 Latin brands, are in there, I don't think it's going to hurt the percentages. So let's suppose the percentage of IDNs, let's suppose we have 5 in Urdu divided by 1,400. Well, how is that close to the percentage of people on the planet who use Urdu script? So I guess Newman is saying that by having 700 Latins in that denominator, that makes that a tougher metric to hit.
As Michael here, to get at a pure number, then you would have to be dividing out how many are brands, how many are generic, both in the IDNs and in the Latin characters. And that might be important if you were going at some absolute number that you were trying to shoot for. Our target is trend closer. So I think although there may be an effect because there are 700 brands, I don't think that that's something that this metric is intended to necessarily track.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because it says closer, it really doesn't matter what the denominator is as long as you trend it over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. Glad we were able to dispense with that quickly, and I'll be able to explain this to Jeff, I hope. Next page.
Steve, Mason here.
Yep.
Just a point of clarification, if I go back to 2.6, when it says quantity of registrar websites offering IDN scripts or languages other than English, does that mean registrations in those, or does it mean the sites are written in those languages? I assume the former.
No, it's sites. It's just that the website itself is readable to somebody who speaks and writes in Urdu.
I think that's right.
I'm not going to go to the mat on this one, but I don't like it. I mean, if my customer base isn't in Urdu, I'm not going to write a site in Urdu.
But again,
it's not a requirement, right? It's not a requirement. It's simply a measure that says that was there an increase?
Yeah.
Over time, relative to 2011.
That's right.
So all we needed is a few registrars who put up a site in Spanish, in Arabic.
And we'll view that as a.
Are you with me? This is not a requirement for you. It's simply a measure of the aggregate number of registrars 3 years out, and we ought to have more IDNs than we had in 2011. And frankly, Mason, that's an unassailable point. You have to assume that if people are using those scripts for their TLDs, that's the script they do their business in.
I believe me, I hope it's the case.
Right, and it's not requiring you to do anything. It's a hope that some registrar will put up an Arabic website to let Arabic speakers see what sites they can buy.
I realize
it's not a requirement today. It may, you know, somebody will try to make it a requirement tomorrow.
Well, fought that battle then.
If we use that argument against everything ever said at ICANN, I guess we'd never get anything done. Let's be aspirational while it's serving the global public interest.
So Olivier,
actually, ICANN signed up for the global public interest. It's in the affirmation.
All right. I want some respect for that point.
All right. But you're not proposing a change.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Okay, Olivier, you got your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. It's Olivier for the transcript. Just to summarize, this whole section is really about the internationalization of the Internet and how well the new GTLD program is contributing to this. That's all. I don't think one should start looking at requests that registrars should be available in the 6 UN languages or the 20 different scripts or 100 different scripts. I think that would be pretty silly if you're... customer base is not set to be in that part of the world. Thanks.
That's right. I think that's right. Maybe we'll move on and try to get through one more page of this before we call it quits.
Do we need to call it quits? Can we
page,
do a review?
Page 16. Let's
more?
Go, let's go, let's go.
Yeah, we're getting there, man.
This is Barry. I don't think we're quite there yet. We've got quite a bit through choice and competition to review, I think, or not so much competition.
Understood, but let's see how we go.
Under that heading then, Cheryl, let's really all make an effort to make this whole conversation be about what categories these should fall into and do our very best not to rehash discussion of the metric itself, because then we can go through them a lot faster. So how do people feel about 2.9?
Well, real quick, Jonathan, 2, 9, 10, and 11 could be taken together. We're in the choice area, and I was proposing these would be open only because registrants don't have any choice to get in to a closed TLD.
I agree completely on all three.
Yep. So there you go. That page done. Next.
Any dissenters? All right, let's keep going. Anything from Jeff, Steve?
Thanks for asking. 2.12, Newman's recommendation is the 2.12 be open only.
And I feel the same way. I think we're still in this issue of internationalization, and it's not a requirement, but just a measure of whether or not that effect has occurred. And I think that's fine, especially since it's just a relative increase, not a percentage.
I think you're right.
Leave it alone. Just...
I think you're right. It gets to the point of that the target itself, the measurement would not suffer by the inclusion of the closed.
That's exactly right.
Leave it alone.
Good.
Keep going. Anything else from Jeff?
He did on 2.14. Yeah, Jeff said on 2.14 that it should not cover closed, but I completely disagree because users will still use closed TLDs. Evan has made this point over and over again on the call. End users still walk their way into closed TLDs, and this survey is about users as much as registrants.
That's right.
And no change.
Agreed.
Agreed. Any dissenters? Then let's move on. As long as we feel like we can work on how to respond to Jeff together, Steve, if you like.
Volume of beer.
So 3.5 here.
3.5 is a relatively minor one. There may be registrars that are wholly owned captives of their corporate parent company in a closed brand TLD. And for them, that as a registrar, they're not even having a website that faces the public because they don't distribute open TLDs. So, again, with vertical integration, Google has a registrar that they will own, and if a registrar does not face the public and sell open TLDs, they don't count in figuring out whether we've increased the quantity of suppliers.
Should we say quantity of public-facing registrars?
I did say that, and the word I used was only count registrars distributing an open GTLD. That's because if it's public-facing and you can't buy anything, it shouldn't count. So public-facing is an imprecise term. How about the term the registrars distributing open GTLDs?
I like that better.
Okay.
It's clear, yeah. Is
okay, 3.6.
Michael?
Let me quickly explain. I felt this should be open only because if the new entrant there really won't be very many registrations. Again, this is registrations. There really won't be very many registrations in the closed. Is our guess, right? But somebody could flip that switch. It might be that there's a lot.
Say that again, Steve. I'm not sure I'm following.
There's not likely to be a lot of registrations in closed TLDs since they can only be their own property. Now, some may come up with a way to let their customers register where the single registrant is the company.
Yeah, Facebook has gone.
Just making the point that this, I'm not sure that quantitatively, I'm not sure that the closed will affect this very much because they may not have a huge denominator. But philosophically, only the open GTLDs will be seen by registrants as generating a new place where they can register names. So rather than have to do everything through Neustar or VeriSign, oh, great, there's a whole bunch of new entrants out there offering open public registrations. That's really what this metric was supposed to look at. New entrants that operate in the relative market that's done up above on 3.1 and 3.2 and 3.3.
Michael here, I understand now I was reading 3.6 differently, and I think for clarity's sake, we might want to add a word or two in that regard, because what's being measured is the availability of different GTLDs in which to register my SLDs, correct? And that is the reason why we would not count new GTLD owners that are owning closed branded.
I don't know. I'm having a harder time with 3.6 than I did with 3.5. 3.5 I didn't have a problem with. 3.6 I find more problematic. Simply because a TLD is not open, it's still going to have registrations in it. And those registrations aren't necessarily, you know, you might have an Amazon TLD that's closed, but it may have booksellers and partners that are that have registrations inside that inside that closed TLD, and I think I would consider those new entrants. So
they wouldn't be under the definition we all agreed to already. The definition of new entrant strictly has to do with whether that company was in the previous legacy space.
Now, okay, so I'm confused by the explanation. So it's GTLD registrations held by new entrants. So is the new entrant a new registry operator or a second-level registrant?
Registrations are always second-level.
Okay, then that wording is clumsy.
Yeah, with the relative share of registrations in new GTLDs, the way you were referring to it, Steve.
Yeah, or to say new GTLD registrations. But a registration means just that. It means a registration. So you would total up the number of registrations, it could be millions, that are held by a new entrant, and then we go on to define new entrant. And we didn't set a target for this. Said that new entrants should operate a significant percentage of new GTLDs. By restricting it to open, then you would not include the closed brands in the denominator when you say a significant percentage of new GTLDs. And this is a tough one because the math might be very minimal.
Right.
The math might be very minimal since there's unlikely to be big quantities of registrations in the closed. Now, I say that, but like Evan just indicated, somebody might come up with a scheme whereby every customer in Comcast or every customer at Verizon gets a second level, but the registrant of record is still Verizon. I don't know. It depends on whether they get granted the exemption to Specification 9.
I could certainly see that kind of thing for Amazon Associates. It was the first thing that popped up when I thought about a third-party registrant that would be part of a closed TLD. And since Amazon is frequently put up as one of the poster children of closed TLDs, that would be a good example. So if you're a bookseller, you have a choice of getting your own second-level domain under .shop.com or whatever in OpenTLD, or you have a choice of being an Amazon partner, and part of the benefits of being an Amazon partner would be getting something under their closed TLD. That's choice.
Right, but this is not choice. This is new entrant. We're in competition. And
right, but it's still, but the bookseller is still a new entrant, right?
Well, no, this doesn't measure it doesn't measure the registrant that are new. It measures the GTLD operators that are new and tries to say that the new entrant operators have a significant percentage of registrations under their belt.
Jonathan, didn't Tobias give us a really good primer on some of these aspects of competition at some point? I'm sure I'm not dreaming that. And that was Cheryl for the record.
And Tobias is...
This is Tobias. I can't remember that.
This is Michael. I'm having difficulty because as I come to understand the measure, I am actually, as it's explained, I'm losing the meaning of it. What we're looking at here are, as new entrants, are owners of the new GTLD registries, correct? And yet I was told earlier that new GTLD registrations are the second level registrations owned by those same registry owners, it appears. The language seems to be, I'd say, circular, but I think that's too clear.
Welcome to my confusion here, too.
So the denominator is the total number of registrations in the GTLD.
Oh, registrations of what? GTLDs?
Registrations mean second level.
Okay.
Names, domain names. I could say new GTLD domain name registrations to make it clear.
Okay.
So you would put that in the denominator, and let's suppose that it's when they do the review, there are 100 million second-level domain registrations in the new GTLD space.
The number
of the numerator, since this says relative share, the numerator would be how many of those registrations are held by new, are in TLDs that are run by new
operators.
Okay. So if Amazon is a new entrant and they have a closed TLD that happens to have a bunch of second-level domains of booksellers, why would that be? Why should they be excluded from this metric?
Because registrants don't have a choice of closed. A registrant cannot get into a closed.
And I just gave you an example of a bookseller.
No, they will not be the registrant of record. They're not allowed to be.
But if you're talking about choice and you're the bookseller.
They can't control it. Remember, Specification 9 is Appendix B, and this is not choice, it's competition.
Oh.
I know they're closely related, Evan, but...
It's not increasing the competition. It's not increasing the diversity in the competition with bona fide new entrants.
Yeah, because the registrants have no choice. The registrant couldn't choose to get into a closed TLD.
Okay, the registrars don't, but I'm looking from the point of view of the registrant. I'm the bookseller. I have a choice of having a second-level domain under an open one, or I have a choice of becoming an Amazon associate, which gives me a second level under a closed one. As far as the public...
An Amazon associate qualify under Specification 9 as an affiliate?
Okay, affiliate.
You do.
What I'm saying is, from the public-facing point, bookseller.amazon in a closed or bookseller.shop in an open, from the public point of view, has the same functionality. And as far as the bookseller is concerned...
Exception to be closed, they cannot distribute, sell, or transfer control of any registrations to any third party that is not an affiliate of the registry operator. And the affiliate is uppercase A. Somebody, some lawyer on the call, tell us, does affiliate have a meaning in a corporate ownership way?
I'm not going to touch that, Steve. You must refer to the contract. How's that?
All I'm trying to say is it doesn't preclude it. It leaves open the possibility, and as such, I would not leave the metric restricted to open. If it doesn't provide competition, then it doesn't provide competition. But if it does, we should allow for that possibility. And again, I'm looking at it from the point of view of the bookstore and of the book buyer.
This is Tobias. Maybe I can give a different example.
Book buyers, though. This is only registrants. This one on competition does nothing to do with the users. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tobias.
I write books, okay? So I have actually domain names already for books that are not yet published. But if I could get a second-level domain under .books, that would be an equivalent alternative for me to .com or .org or .info or whatever I'm choosing now. So from my perspective, under .author, author is also applied for by Amazon, or book, that would basically be my alternative as an author. So at least from my perspective, those would be somehow equivalent, but certainly in a competition sense, it's more complicated because it's not really the same market, but nevertheless, or not necessarily the same market, because it wouldn't necessarily include the same breadth of rights I get when I register my own domain name. I don't know whether that helps.
But Tobias, what we're trying to measure is, did the introduction of new DTLDs bring a significant percentage of new entrants into the market? And new entrants are registry operators, and we said they're new if they weren't already running legacy. So this was specifically designed to see if we brought new people in, not just in terms of out of 1,400 how many are new, but weighted by the number of domains they get, the number of registrations they get. So this is really just an attempt to say, did the new entrants come in and has the expansion brought competition, not just from the same old guys who were around in 2011, but new entrants?
This is to be
a way of weighting it on their registrations as opposed to just simply counting the number of TLDs. I believe, but is this the only one for which we have a new entrant? I believe it is.
Might be, yeah.
So I can tell folks have been getting, it's late, I realize that. Maybe we're confused by weighting it by the number of registrations. Is it simpler to just say the quantity of new GTLD operators that are new entrants?
Or why not, rather than registration, say domains?
That wasn't what I was suggesting, but yes, you could say domain registrations, to be doubly clear.
Steve, this is Michael. 3.3, I think we were looking at the number of new registries, just looking at the number of registries coming online. I do like then having this later measure of the percentage of the space that these people are opening up.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that's why we're interested in doing it. This is Jonathan for the transcript, because it's just the fact that there's new operators, if nobody's actually using their domains, then that's not as interesting.
Right, and what I think my difficulty comes from the third sentence in 3.6, and if I remove that, then I understand what we're getting after. We're just looking at the relative share of new GTLD registrations that are held by or offered from within these registries owned by new entrants. And then the rest of this is just defining new entrants. But when I've got two sentences that both define it, I'm getting confused.
But I thought the point wasn't redefining the point. It was just the matter of, do we open this to new, to do we add in the proviso of open GTLDs? So I'm just trying to say, I don't think it needs that limitation. If it turns out that closed, you know, that closed don't offer anything new, well, then that becomes part of the measure. So I'm advocating essentially to leave 3.6 the way it was.
Well, the practical implication is that virtually all of the closed corporates will be new entrants. Virtually all. We'll have 700 of them.
Right. And if they're closed, then they won't have that big a relative share. That is worthwhile measuring.
This is to be as I would expose.
I could go with you on that, Evan. just take out the open only. And I think Michael's been saying that all along. So I'm happy to withdraw this one.
This is Barry. Another way to look at it is instead of trying to classify it, how about it's across or that the metrics gauged by category? Let's look at it for open GTLDs. Let's look at it for closed brand TLDs. And perhaps there may be competition within those classifications.
Right, and the fact
great idea, Barry. Just put a note in there to do separate analysis for closed versus open TLDs.
This is Michael. I would agree with that.
Do it without two rows. Just do it as a sentence in place of open GTLD only.
Crackling just on my phone or everybody?
I've got it on mine.
So what I've included here was just an additional sentence as analysis to be performed across all classifications of new GTLDs.
Well, another way to say it is prepare separate measures for open and closed GTLDs. Do a bunch of the open, do a bunch of the closed. Because if you really just want to say across all classes, we would simply we don't need to add anything because that would be the assumption.
Which is what I've been advocating for. Just leave it.
That's right. And Barry came up with an alternative suggestion that says not only leave it, but add the word separate analysis, if that's what you were saying, Barry.
Correct. So as I have it now, a new sentence, prepare separate measures across open and closed GTLD.
But not between them.
About, but not
Evan,
necessarily
you would like to see,
between them.
You would like to see total, only open, and only closed, all three?
I'm saying leave the original 3.6. When don't put in a filter.
Okay, let's do that. It's getting late. I'll withdraw my change. So
this is Barry. I agree because the base data here is every TLD is going to have some sort of classification or categorization against it. We're going to be measuring them all anyway, and then it's still going to boil up one way or another.
And let me go to 3.7, and obviously 3.7 should be open only. I didn't have it in the draft, and that's my fault, but I don't know how you could do 3.7 for the closed. They're not even available. In other words, 3.7 was driven from the U.S. government, who said they wanted to measure over time how prices would be affected as new entrants came in and gave registrants the option to go other places with competing prices and terms.
Right.
And a registrant does not have a choice of going into a closed TLD.
And the scenario I can think of is Google starts giving away second-level TLDs, but you don't own it. It's second-level domains, but you don't own it.
Yeah, and they're not allowed to register. So you would not be the registrant of record.
Right. But you still have a domain that you have. It's not yours, but you rent it or you whatever. I'm just saying.
No target for this one. The bar is rather low. But I can tell you that when the U.S. government asked for this one, they were mostly interested in assessing the competition for COM. And they want to look at prices and quantity. And it's a tough lift for staff because they actually asked for weekly basis. By doing it for open, we cut in half the number of registries that staff has to look at. From 700 to 1,400, we would double their work if we include them all. And for that reason, I would say let's be realistic here and count only the opens. No second to that motion?
I agree.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I think it's more likely to actually get done if it's that way.
I agree.
Okay, 3. Next page.
3.8.
Everyone sort of agree that 3.8 is, again, it's open only.
Yeah, same issue.
Yeah. Well, the whole set, really.
Okay, and we have I think we only have one more set. 3.9. And on 3.9, I used the strike-through text because, believe it or not, 3.9 and 3.10, we had already thought about the open versus closed, and we just set it in a way that didn't match the new definitions. So I struck through the old and put in the new.
Yeah.
And Michael Graham has asked price of SLDs, but the price of a GTLD domain, Michael, is a second-level domain. That's what the word domain means, right? Do I need to say second-level domain? Would that make it clearer to everyone?
I mean, if it's clear within the context of the community, I'm fine with it.
Community on the phone? Should we?
I had my trademark hat on there for a moment.
I understand, but I'm just asking the folks on the call. We need to say second-level domains, or can we just say domain?
What would be perfectly clear would be price of domains in new GTLD.
That's fine by me.
I can live
wholesale price of domains in new GTLDs.
Please, yep.
Retail price of domains in new GTLDs.
Yep.
And that we take out the strike through and keep the open GTLDs only.
Both agreed.
Same language as we've now used elsewhere. Yes, and yes again.
Excellent. No objections?
Well, I'll register mine, but I'm the only voice here that doesn't like it.
That doesn't like making it only GTLDs?
Correct.
I see.
Okay.
I think what we're doing is we're putting in a serious imposition on some of the innovations that have the potential to take place in closed TLDs, and I'll leave it at that. I think that we're missing an opportunity to measure something that could happen that hasn't happened yet. There's some innovation that could happen, a possibility for some innovation, and I think we're just closing off the ability to measure it before we even try.
We're closing nothing off because we're making a recommendation now to a review team that has the advantage of standing in the field a full year after the first new GTLD is launched. And if they look back and it turns out Amazon was giving bookstores or Google was giving users, they will do exactly what Evan is suggesting.
Yep, that's when it needs to be
done. They absolutely will, Evan. So we're not closing anything off.
Well, then why put in restriction now?
It isn't a restriction. It's a focus on the data gathering that has to be done by a vendor. It's a phenomenal amount of work for a staff to begin to set this up, start to gather the data. And there is no retail price. They're not available to the public. There won't be a retail price, so 3.10 isn't even applicable to a closed.
All right, I'll disagree and leave it at that. I don't want to slow things down, but I just want to make the point. I think there's a missed opportunity here.
This is Michael. Can I raise my hand very quickly to put to the group in response to what Evan's brought up? I apologize for the phone. On page 2, where we state the understanding of the limitations of the studies, perhaps to put in a sentence that also acknowledges the fact that I'm trying to go with the language that you just used, Evan, that there may be changes in innovations that occur after the preparation of these metrics that should be included in the review of the team that we cannot anticipate at this time and that should be considered then.
Is 311 exactly that?
No, because I personally don't think so, because I think some of it is going to involve price competition, just not in a way anyone here envisions. I honestly think by you know, I'll sign my piece and then I'll shut up. I honestly think that by restricting all these things to open GTLDs, you're basically shutting out the unknown unknowns.
Okay, I hear you, but we already agreed to both of these. We just changed the words from open to the general public to the words open GTLDs only. These are just definitional changes to embrace the new definition. Right? We already adopted both 3.9 and 3.10 to be only the open.
Well, and they may be the only ones that it's possible to easily get this data too, given they may have different contract requirements.
This is Tobias. Even maybe you are actually focusing on something that is more relevant to 3.7. And I apologize for being late on a very late Friday evening here. I think I'm not completely sure what we agreed to on 3.7. Did we limit that to open GTLDs only?
Yes.
And I think I have a problem with that, and maybe that's also related to the problem Evan is having. When I think we should envisage a situation where the option to have, for example, a free domain under a Google would be an alternative to having to pay for a domain name in some other TLD. And I think if we don't capture these things, then we fail to measure something important with respect to 3.7. So
all
I think
right,
what
so
the U.S. government wanted.
He's had his hand up for a while, but and then Mike, I'll let you raise your point that you did in the chat about 3.11. Mason, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. Just one thing, I know in Note 5 of the report, there's a notation in there about how the measurements related to, say, 3.10 would be somewhat dependent not just on the price of the domain name itself, but on other services that registrars may offer, and I can testify to that fact. You know, sometimes products are bundled, as you well know, and the price, the measurement that you're trying to get at may very well be obscured. Another thing that, this may be in the report, if not, I haven't seen it, but another thing that may be difficult in that environment in collecting data is some level of unwillingness on the part of registrars to share certain price-related information because it's competitive in nature and they don't want to disclose it to the rest of the market. So I guess I just want this team's eyes open on that fact that, as you correctly point out, it is difficult to automate collection in the best scenario, and it would be, I think it would be difficult to get a completely accurate picture, again, even in the best scenario. I'm not trying to throw roadblocks, I'm just pointing out what I think I know about the market.
That's right. Michael, I think you made a relevant point in the chat. Can you surface that verbally here? And
We're talking about the 3.11. Again, I apologize for my phone. I think, and this was after your comment, Steve, asking whether or not 3.11 might be sort of that catch-all providing for what we cannot anticipate. I think with a minor change, it could be. I was just suggesting that we change the language just a bit to say qualitative assessment of other non-price indicia of competition through innovations, dot, dot, dot. That would have this be an open-handed suggestion that these other types of competition, to the extent that they could be viewed, should be. We just can't define them because there are so many possibilities. And also looking at the fact that it's not always as we were discussing, it's not always price that indicates competition. It can be other services or benefits. I think that's what you were getting at, Barry?
Yes. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
So as we go on, Michael, can you redraft it as a whole sentence for Barry?
It's getting late in the day to do a whole sentence, but I'll try.
I've got it. Qualitative assessment of other non-price indicia of competition through innovations that
yep.
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay.
Well done, Barry.
All right. Tobias, do you still have your hand up?
Wasn't he back at 3.6? I thought Tobias took us back.
Well, is there a possibility to get back to 3.7?
3.7, sorry, Tobias. Yes, it was 3.7.
Is there a possibility to talk about that again?
Well, it depends.
Or am I too late in mentioning my disagreement?
Oh, okay.
Sorry? Okay, so basically...
Like I said, we're trying to avoid rehashing things that we've already gone through, so it's...
But hang on, Jonathan.
Flexibility to new versus... open versus closed CLDs.
From what the existing 3.7 is to now limit it to open only, and that was Tobias' point.
And we went very quickly through 3.7, and there was nothing in writing there. So I was a bit slow in reacting.
Okay.
So basically... I think it would be good to include at least the closed keyword TLDs, if that was the right terminology, in 3.7, because they may actually be alternatives to regular open gTLDs. So I think when people move from one kind of TLDs to another, that should be something we can manage to measure here.
So just
but by definition, a closed keyword TLD is not available for any registrants other than the owner.
Well,
definition of closed.
It might become somehow available, just like I have suddenly an email address with Facebook, or I mean, Google might suddenly give you a gTLD for together with your Gmail account, or Amazon might give me a domain name when they sell my book, something like that. And then
right.
I might
so
suddenly say, okay,
enough
I
concern about this, that what we had in the original 3.7 said that the TLD attributes should be noted with the data, that is open/closed country of operations. So what if we said open gTLDs, comma, closed keyword TLDs, comma, country of operations.
Yeah, actually, it's already there. I'm fine with that.
And then we would take away any red text that said open gTLDs only. But we're asking staff to measure it separately. TLD attributes should be noted with the data. So I'm proposing where it says open/closed team, change that to open gTLDs, comma, closed keyword gTLDs, comma, country of operations, et cetera.
That makes sense.
As ever, Steve, you are a wordsmith.
But this is what Evan was getting at as well in the chat.
It does. It picks it up perfectly.
Evan, you still with us?
Yep. I'm okay. I mean, so it's basically you're saying this: the 3.7 will apply to all except closed brands.
That's it.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And that works too. That works fine. That's good.
Do we do the same to 9 and 10 on the outside chance that there's some way they get around the specification 9? Do you want 3.9 and 3.10 to be open GTLDs and closed keyword, or are they open only?
Well, see, something like .google, which is closed, or .dot Amazon is closed, could have exactly the kind of scenario Tobias was talking about. And so all I'm saying is, don't shut out this measurement exercise from the possibility that that could be available. And to say that this isn't a matter of choice or competition is I think not really being Well, I mean, I think it's eliminating a possibility that could very well be an issue of choice or competition. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But the survey's got to allow for this possibility that it could happen.
Yeah, I'm happy to use the new language, the new drafted language in the following 3.9.3.10. I think we've been repetitious for the sake of clarity before. We may as well do it again.
But Cheryl, even in the case of closed brands, if a closed brand is a .google and it's offering stuff to authors, like Tobias was saying, then why are we automatically saying
that? Did you hear what I'm saying, Evan? The new language that Steve just proposed back in 3.7 should be repeated in 9 and 10.
Okay. That should work.
That language is TLD attributes should be noted with the data, i.e. open GTLD, closed keyword GTLD. Is that what you're getting at, Cheryl?
Yep, that's what I'm getting at, too.
Yeah, that works for me. Thanks.
Next.
Oh, no, I think that's all. And I did put Appendix B in there, which is the actual specification 9. And during much of this discussion of the creative approaches of Google giving second-level domains to all of us and Amazon giving them to bookstores, I'm just still scratching my head, folks, because specification 9 says they can't do it.
And you may be absolutely right.
The point of my picking specification 9 as the definition for open and closed was to avoid all of this ambiguity. But let's have consensus. Let's come together, and I'm happy to pull out the open only on 9 and 10.
Okay. Well, congratulations, everyone.
That wasn't too shabby, team.
Thanks for sticking it out. I think we may have lost Mason, but.
I'm still here. So, to the team, I'll circulate the next version out here in the next hour or so. Let's review through the next version. If you have any other changes, please send those to the list, and we'll look to publish the final version middle to late of next week.
And ALAC was gracious enough to move approval through last time, and we have to regretfully ask that you consider the new version over there in the ALAC sometime soon. We would hope to get it to GNSO Council by the November the 15th Council meeting.
Right. We actually have to submit it by the 9th to make the deadline for submitting documents.
Olivia, Cheryl here. Would you be running an EXCO before that date or approximately around that date?
Yes, Cheryl, it's Olivia here. I'm currently looking at the calendar, and it looks like we will have a NEXCOM on the week of the 15th, so not one as early as that. What I can do is to ask for it to be sent over to the list, and we can do a vote online, exactly. Would it be possible to have a redline version?
Yes, Olivia, I'll send both.
Because that'd be great. At that point, it's just we're seeing minor changes, and I think that we'll have broad support on this. So, they said yes to the first version, and I don't see this one being vastly different. But it would certainly help to expedite matters if we had red lines, so we could just have 5 days reading time and then a vote.
Especially if someone like Evan was to move that resolution. Hint, hint, Evan.
And the red line would be vis-a-vis what the ALAC approved last time.
Correct.
That's right, yes.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you again.
It's been a pleasure.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
Terrific. Enjoy the weekend, but not until you've done your final review that Barry sends out. No relaxation till after that, right, Barry?
Absolutely.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye, all. Thanks, all.
This concludes today's conference. Please connect at this time.